Chapter 80. Mr. Micawber's gauntlet, until the day arrived on which I was to entertain my newly found old friends, I lived principally on Dora and coffee. In my lovelorn condition, my appetite languished, and I was glad of it, for I felt as though it would have been an act of perfidy towards Dora, to have a natural relish for my dinner. The quantity of walking exercise I took was not in this respect attended with its usual consequence, as the disappointment counteracted the fresh air. I have my doubts too, founded on the acute experience acquired at this period of my life, whether a sound enjoyment of animal food can develop itself freely in any human subject who is always in torment from tight boots. I think the extremities require to be at peace before the stomach will conduct itself with vigor. On the occasion of this domestic little party, I did not repeat my former extensive preparations. I merely provided a pair of soles, a small leg of mutton, and a pigeon pie. Mrs. Krupp broke out into rebellion on my first bashful hint in reference to the cooking of the fish and joint, and said, with a dignified sense of injury, "No. No, sir. You will not ask me such a thing, for you are better acquainted with me than to suppose me capable of doing what I cannot do with ample satisfaction to my own feelings." But, in the end, a compromise was effected, and Mrs. Krupp consented to achieve this feat, on condition that I dined from home for a fortnight afterwards. And here I may remark, that what I underwent from Mrs. Krupp, in consequence of the tyranny she established over me, was dreadful. I never was so much afraid of anyone. We made a compromise of everything. If I hesitated, she was taken with that wonderful disorder which was always lying in ambush in her system, ready, at the shortest notice, to prey upon her vitals. If I rang the bell impatiently, after half a dozen unavailing modest pulls, and she appeared at last, which was not by any means to be relied upon, she would appear with a reproachful aspect, sink breathless on the chair near the door, lay her hand upon her nankeen bosom, and become so ill, that I was glad, at any sacrifice of brandy or anything else, to get rid of her. If I objected to having my bed made at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, which I do still think an uncomfortable arrangement, one motion of her hand towards the same nankeen region of wounded sensibility was enough to make me falter an apology. In short, I would have done anything in an honorable way, rather than give Mrs. Krupp offense, and she was the terror of my life. I bought a second-hand dumb waiter for this dinner party, in preference to re-engaging the handy young man, against whom I had conceived a prejudice, in consequence of meeting him in the Strand, one Sunday morning, in a waistcoat remarkably like one of mine, which had been missing since the former occasion. The young gal was re-engaged, but on the stipulation that she should only bring in the dishes, and then withdraw to the landing place, beyond the outer door, where a habit of sniffing she had contracted would be lost upon the guests, and where her retiring on the plates would be a physical impossibility. Having laid in the materials for a bowl of punch, to be compounded by Mr. Micawber, having provided a bottle of lavender water, 2 wax candles, a paper of mixed pins, and a pincushion, to assist Mrs. Micawber in her toilet at my dressing table, having also caused the fire in my bedroom to be lighted for Mrs. Micawber's convenience, and having laid the cloth with my own hands, I awaited the result with composure. At the appointed time, my 3 visitors arrived together. Mr. Micawber with more shirt collar than usual, and a new ribbon to his eyeglass. Mrs. Micawber with her cap in a whitey-brown paper parcel. Traddles carrying the parcel, and supporting Mrs. Micawber on his arm. They were all delighted with my residence. When I conducted Mrs. Micawber to my dressing table, and she saw the scale on which it was prepared for her, she was in such raptures, that she called Mr. Micawber to come in and look. "My dear Copperfield," said Mr. Micawber, "this is luxurious. This is a way of life which reminds me of the period When I was myself in a state of celibacy, and Mrs. Micawber had not yet been solicited to plight her faith at the hymeneal altar. Apostrophe, he means, solicited by him, Mr. Copperfield, apostrophe said Mrs. Micawber, archly. He cannot answer for others. Apostrophe, my dear, apostrophe returned Mr. Micawber with sudden seriousness, I have no desire to answer for others. I am too well aware that when, in the inscrutable decrees of fate, you were reserved for me, it is possible you may have been reserved for one, destined, after a protracted struggle, at length to fall a victim, to pecuniary involvements of a complicated nature. I understand your illusion, my love. I regret it, but I can bear it. Apostrophe, Micawber. Apostrophe, apostrophe, exclaimed Mrs. Micawber, in tears. Have I deserved this? I, who never have deserted you, who never will desert you, Micawber. Apostrophe, apostrophe, my love, apostrophe, said Mr. Micawber, much affected, you will forgive, and our old and tried friend Copperfield will, I am sure, forgive, the momentary laceration of a wounded spirit, made sensitive by a recent collision with the minion of power, in other words, with a ribald turncock attached to the waterworks, and will pity, not condemn, its excesses. Apostrophe, Mr. Micawber then embraced Mrs. Micawber, and pressed my hand, leaving me to infer from this broken illusion, that his domestic supply of water had been cut off that afternoon, in consequence of default in the payment of the company's rates. To divert his thoughts from this melancholy subject, I informed Mr. Micawber, that I relied upon him for a bowl of punch, and led him to the lemons. His recent despondency, not to say despair, was gone in a moment. I never saw a man so thoroughly enjoy himself amid the fragrance of lemon peel and sugar, the odor of burning rum, and the steam of boiling water, as Mr. Micawber did that afternoon. It was wonderful to see his face shining at us out of a thin cloud of these delicate fumes, as he stirred, and mixed, and tasted, and looked as if he were making, instead of punch, a fortune for his family down to the latest posterity. As to Mrs. Micawber, I don't know whether it was the effect of the cap, or the lavender water, or the pins, or the fire, or the wax candles, but she came out of my room, comparatively speaking, lovely, and the lark was never gayer than that excellent woman. I suppose I never ventured to inquire, but I suppose that Mrs. Krupp, after frying the soles, was taken ill, because we broke down at that point. The leg of mutton came up very red within, and very pale without, besides having a foreign substance of a gritty nature sprinkled over it, as if it had had a fall into the ashes of that remarkable kitchen fireplace. But we were not in condition to judge of this fact from the appearance of the gravy, for as much as the young gal had dropped it all upon the stairs where it remained, by the by, in a long train, until it was worn out. The pigeon pie was not bad, but it was a delicious of pie, the crust being like a disappointing head, phrenologically speaking, full of lumps and bumps, with nothing particular underneath. In short, the banquet was such a failure, that I should have been quite unhappy about the failure, I mean, for I was always unhappy about Dora, if I had not been relieved by the great good humor of my company, and by a bright suggestion from Mr. Micawber. My dear friend Copperfield, apostrophe said Mr. Micawber, accidents will occur in the best regulated families, and in families not regulated by that pervading influence which sanctifies, while it enhances the I would say, in short, by the influence of woman, in the lofty character of wife, they may be expected with confidence, and must be borne with philosophy. If you will allow me to take the liberty of remarking, that there are few comestibles better, in their way, than a devil, and that I believe, with a little division of labor, we could accomplish a good one, if the young person in attendance could produce a gridiron, I would put it to you, that this little misfortune may be easily repaired. Apostrophe, there was a gridiron in the pantry, on which my morning rasher of bacon was cooked. We added in a twinkling, and immediately applied ourselves to carrying Mr. Micawber's idea into effect. The division of labor to which he had referred was this. Traddles cut the mutton in two slices. Mr. Micawber, who could do anything of this sort to perfection, covered them with pepper, mustard, salt, and cayenne. I put them on the gridiron, turned them with a fork, and took them off, under Mr. Micawber's direction. And Mrs. Micawber heated, and continually stirred, some mushroom ketchup in a little saucepan. When we had slices enough done to begin upon, we fell to, with our sleeves still tucked up at the wrist, more slices sputtering and blazing on the fire, and our attention divided between the mutton on our plates, and the mutton then preparing. What with the novelty of this cookery, the excellence of it, the bustle of it, the frequent starting up to look after it, the frequent sitting down to dispose of it as the crisp slices came off the gridiron hot and hot, the being so busy, so flushed with the fire, so amused, and in the midst of such a tempting noise and savor, we reduced the leg of mutton to the bone. My own appetite came back miraculously. I am ashamed to record it, but I really believe I forgot Dora for a little while. I am satisfied that Mr. and Mrs. Micawber could not have enjoyed the feast more if they had sold a bed to provide it. Traddles laughed as heartily, almost the whole time, as he ate and worked. Indeed we all did, all at once, and I dare say there was never a greater success. We were at the height of our enjoyment, and were all busily engaged, in our several departments, endeavoring to bring the last batch of slices to a state of perfection that should crown the feast, when I was aware of a strange presence in the room, and my eyes encountered those of the staid lit timer, standing hat in hand before me. "What's the matter?" I involuntarily asked. "I beg your pardon, sir, I was directed to come in. Is my master not here, sir?" No. "Have you not seen him, sir?" No. "Don't you come from him?" "Not immediately so, sir." "Did he tell you you would find him here?" "Not exactly so, sir. But I should think he might be here tomorrow, as he has not been here today." "Is he coming up from Oxford?" "I beg, sir," he returned respectfully, "that you will be seated, and allow me to do this." With which he took the fork from my unresisting hand, and bent over the gridiron, as if his whole attention were concentrated on it. We should not have been much discomposed, I dare say, by the appearance of Steerforth himself, but we became in a moment the meekest of the meek before his respectable serving man. Mr. Micawber, humming a tune, to show that he was quite at ease, subsided into his chair, with the handle of a hastily concealed fork sticking out of the bosom of his coat, as if he had stabbed himself. Mrs. Micawber put on her brown gloves, and assumed a genteel languor. Traddles ran his greasy hands through his hair, and stood it bolt upright, and stared in confusion on the tablecloth. As for me, I was a mere infant at the head of my own table, and hardly ventured to glance at the respectable phenomenon, who had come from heaven knows where, to put my establishment to rights. Meanwhile he took the mutton off the gridiron, and gravely handed it round. We all took some, but our appreciation of it was gone, and we merely made a show of eating it. As we severally pushed away our plates, he noiselessly removed them, and set on the cheese. He took that off too, when it was done with, cleared the table, piled everything on the dumb waiter, gave us our wine glasses, and, of his own accord, wheeled the dumb waiter into the pantry. All this was done in a perfect manner, and he never raised his eyes from what he was about. Yet his very elbows, when he had his back towards me, seemed to teem with the expression of his fixed opinion that I was extremely young. "Can I do anything more, sir?" I thanked him and said, "No, but would he take no dinner himself?" "None, I am obliged to you, sir. apostrophe, is Mr. Steerforth coming from Oxford? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I beg your pardon, sir? Apostrophe, apostrophe, is Mr. Steerforth coming from Oxford? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I should imagine that he might be here tomorrow, sir. I rather thought he might have been here today, sir. The mistake is mine, no doubt, sir. Apostrophe, if you should see him first, apostrophe, said one. If you'll excuse me, sir, I don't think I shall see him first. Apostrophe, in case you do, apostrophe, said I, pray say that I am sorry he was not here today, as an old schoolfellow of his was here. Apostrophe, indeed, sir. Apostrophe, apostrophe, and he divided a bow between me and Traddles, with a glance at the latter. He was moving softly to the door, when, in a forlorn hope of saying something naturally which I never could, to this man I said, oh, Littimer, apostrophe, sir, apostrophe, apostrophe, did you remain long at Yarmouth, that time? Apostrophe, apostrophe, not particularly so, sir. Apostrophe, you saw the boat completed? Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes, sir. I remained behind on purpose, to see the boat completed. Apostrophe, I know. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he raised his eyes to mine respectfully. Apostrophe, Mr. Steerforth has not seen it yet, I suppose? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I really can't say, sir. I think but I really can't say, sir. I wish you good night, sir. Apostrophe, he comprehended everybody present, in the respectful bow with which he followed these words, and disappeared. My visitor seemed to breathe more freely when he was gone, but my own relief was very great, for besides the constraint, arising from that extraordinary sense of being at a disadvantage which I always had in this man's presence, my conscience had embarrassed me with whispers that I had mistrusted his master, and I could not repress a vague uneasy dread that he might find it out. How was it, having so little in reality to conceal, that I always did feel as if this man were finding me out? Mr. Micawber roused me from this reflection, which was blended with a certain remorseful apprehension of seeing Steerforth himself, by bestowing many encomiums on the absent Littimer as a most respectable fellow, and a thoroughly admirable servant. Mr. Micawber, I may remark, had taken his full share of the general Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.